during their biggest cross-border attack in decades. Israel says it's at war and has launched airstrikes on the Gaza Strip.
Fears of all-out war in the Middle East. Iran retaliates after the US and Israel launch a barrage of missiles.
The United States military is undertaking a massive and ongoing operation to prevent this very wicked, radical dictatorship from threatening America and our core national security interests.
So we've had Brexit, a pandemic, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and Donald Trump twice. It's hard to remember such a time. With all that's gone on, are we even the same people as we were back then? Step into the briefing room and together we'll find out. Ish. To discuss the last decade and how it shaped us, I'm joined by Anand Menon, who's Professor of European Politics and Foreign Affairs at King's College London, Bronwyn Maddox, who's Director and CEO at the think tank Chatham House, and Meg Russell, who's Professor of British and Comparative Politics in the Department of Political Science at University College London. So I want to start by asking you all to tell us one thing that happened in the last 10 years which you would never have predicted. Anand Menon.
I mean, let me start by saying that one of the victims of the last 10 years has been my capacity to be surprised by anything, because I've been surprised so many times by so many different things. I was genuinely amazed that Donald Trump managed to win that second term, because a few months out, I just thought it would have been impossible. And the way that swung round in the latter days of Biden with the slight farce of Kamala Harris, that took me aback.
Bronwyn Maddox.
AI. I couldn't have foreseen, not just that we all are talking about it, but the sense of this suddenly thrusting itself into absolutely everything we do, and the sense of really not being able to see the future, never mind over 10 years, but over 1 or 2 years, because of the way it is changing things. And if you're kind of slow and overwhelmed by it, well, there are a bunch of other people who are not and are racing ahead with it. And so I did not feel that coming in anyway.
Meg Russell.
I have to start by saying so much. Where do you begin? So many things. Thinking about our politics and going back to Brexit, what that did to our attitudes, to our institutions, you know, the prorogation of Parliament, the rubbishing of Parliament by the Conservative Party, you know, the people who used to be the maintainers in our traditions, that running on a manifesto that said we'd been paralysed by a broken parliament in 2019. And then, you know, the fact we've had 6 prime ministers in 10 years, that's not the kind of thing we used to do.
So are you talking about effectively a radicalisation?
A fragmentation, a polarisation, a rise of populism, attacking elites and traditions, and everything just moving so fast.
The briefing room started just a few weeks before the Brexit referendum, so actually we weren't allowed to talk about it at all in those weeks, because that's the way in which the BBC works. But it's quite a good place, therefore, for us to begin here on particular issues. Now, casting your minds back, how much of a surprise was the result that we were leaving the EU? Bronwyn.
It was a huge surprise. I remember watching the results through the night, not right through the night, but waking up every sort of hour or so, and realising that it was not going to go the way that the government had assumed in bringing the referendum in the first place, and not the way that loads of pollsters had said, and that this really was going to be a huge change.
And wasn't it the case that actually quite a lot of people, even people who took part in the debate about Brexit, didn't really quite realise just how big a thing it was?
Yeah, that's definitely the case. On several levels, I think. I mean, there are two separate things here. I think everyone underestimated just how complicated the process would be. I mean, we barely talked about Northern Ireland, for instance, which became one of the big stumbling blocks in the negotiations. But the second thing, I think, is we hadn't anticipated just how profoundly divided we were. And I don't mean divided between Leave and Remain. I mean divided between Remain and the different sorts of Leave, which meant, as we saw over and over again, both in the country and in Parliament, that there genuinely wasn't a majority for any kind of outcome.
Meg, you were one of the experts that we consulted during the course of the process after the vote, because it was difficult to understand for quite a lot of people what was happening constitutionally. What did Brexit mean in constitutional, political and economic terms? There, that's quite a wide canvas for you.
Politically, it saw and it further caused the breaking apart of the two main political parties, the two traditional political parties. And the way that the vote worked, there were Labour politicians whose constituents had voted Leave and Labour politicians whose constituents had voted Remain. And the same was true for the Conservatives as well. So while politicians had taken their positions ahead of the referendum, people were having to change their tune to respond to the people who elected them once they knew the results, including the result locally. And basically both of the two main parties were split down this dividing line. The public was split. So there's a kind of a polarisation among the public which is not aligned with the political parties. And quite quickly there's research showing that people's alignment with Leave and Remain is much stronger than their alignment is with political parties and has been traditionally with political parties. And indeed, you know, Brexit becomes a form, your view on Brexit becomes a form of identity. And people, we've become two tribes, and people begin to dislike each other on the basis of which tribe they're in, and the parties don't align with that, which is really, really difficult.
And what did it mean in terms of the Constitution, Bronwyn Maddox?
It showed all kinds of rifts beyond the political parties. Some in the devolved nations, Wales voting to leave, Scotland and Northern Ireland voting to stay. It showed generational differences, young people much keener on Europe than older ones. It showed a split between town and country, that cities broadly more for Europe than people outside them were. So suddenly all these differences, not just of identity, but really of quite passionate allegiance, were exposed to us, and we had to acknowledge how many deep differences there were in the country.
And one of the most immediate effects was a questioning of the role of Parliament, because the public had spoken in a referendum, and there was very quickly a challenge as to whether Parliament needed to give its approval to the triggering of what was called the Article 50 process to begin the negotiations to leave. People who supported Brexit clearly thought that there was a risk of Parliament standing in the way and it shouldn't be interfering, whereas people who were trying to sort of follow the normal legal norms were saying, well, actually, the government didn't legislate well enough for this referendum. They didn't put in their referendum bill that if we vote for leave, we will leave. We will begin negotiations. Parliament had not approved that. And that was a bit of stupidity on the part of the government because they didn't think we were going to vote for leave. But that's how it ended up in the Supreme Court, which had to rule on whether Parliament ought to have a say in this matter or not. And that was the beginning of those divisions over institutions.
Bronwyn, did we lose several years, in effect, to Brexit debate that we should have been, we could have been spending on dealing with other problems?
No kidding. If you make any of these changes, even just merging two Whitehall departments, it essentially knocks out something substantial the government might otherwise do. So just on that test of distraction and diversion of effort, it was enormous, like a war.
And then what about the impact on the country economically?
Well, I think we are now getting the data to reinforce what we had from the original economic forecasts. And I think what we can say with a significant degree of certainty is the data bears out those forecasts, which is to say trade has been impacted. That has impacted on economic growth in this country, which in turn has impacted on things like tax take. There has been an economic impact. What we don't know is the exact scale of that. Economists seem to love putting sort of spuriously specific figures on things. So the range is broadly in the serious economic studies at the moment between about 3% and 8% of GDP.
Bronwyn Maddox, it's also changed other things which might actually, on the other side, have helped us a little.
Yes, I think it has. It's helped us in various ways, but they're somewhat subtle, I think. Britain had immediately to forge direct one-to-one relationships with other countries, where otherwise, when in the EU, it was dealing with them through the EU, in the case to deal with trade. And the quality of some of those relationships did get go up. It doesn't mean that trade deals then flowed forth that were worth an awful lot. Some have, and they're worth a bit, but small. But the relationships are better. It also has given Britain a bit of flexibility towards the US, towards China, to find a position separately from the EU, and perhaps that helped with Trump at various points, but I have to say that probably is outweighed by the protection and the strength that Britain would have got from being within that bigger bloc.
And what about our own legislation? I mean, can we actually do stuff now that we didn't do before?
Yes, we can. And, for example, the planning directives of Europe that really affected the UK very much more than some other European countries, because Britain is so densely populated and were one of the many factors leading to the problems of HS2, well, you can begin to shed some of those.
We talked about how Brexit created a kind of polarisation and identification, but it's not been the only thing which has been polarising. We've had culture wars, gender wars in the past 10 years and so on. And have we become a less...